Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. If you are an older adult, health issues are a big deal, and we're dealing with some of them in today's program. People on Medicare have some big decisions and a deadline to deal with. More on that later, but we'll begin with an effort to diagnose and treat health issues facing the elderly. Local geriatric research has been given a boost by a significant federal grant that should make care available to more older Missourians. It's important because the state has an increasing percentage of aging population. Joining me in studio is Dr. John Morley, SLU Care geriatrician and director of geriatrics at the St. Louis University School of Medicine. He'll be heading the project funded by the grant. Doctor, nice to have you with us again.
Hi, Don. Great to be back.
So you've got $2.5 million to, I don't want to say play with, but to use in a very positive way.
Well, we've got a reasonable amount of money to try and do the impossible, which is to try and improve the geriatric care by primary care physicians and healthcare professionals over the whole state and try and get about 90% of people over the age of 65 appropriately screened for health issues that occur when they get older. I'm assuming this is going to take 8 to 10 years, not the 3 years. But it's very exciting because, as you know, and I think all of the public know, physicians on the whole are not well trained in geriatrics, the exception maybe St. Louis University, where we've been putting a lot of effort in. But physicians just don't get a lot of training in geriatrics. And then we're getting old. There are lots of boomers around. And now we understand that people, as they get older, have other issues compared to the classical medical issues, which are much more predictive of how badly they're going to do. And if we don't intervene early, we find that they just go downhill much faster.
All of a sudden, $2.5 million doesn't sound like all that much money.
Well, we're giving most of it away to people to get them enthused. So, in fact, it's not very much money. It goes to a large number of people up in Kirksville, down in Perryville County, all over St. Louis, in the inner city, out in North St. Louis County, and within the medical school to increase the training of the different health professionals.
Just to be sure I have this right, the money is going to be used essentially to train primary care physicians who don't have much experience in dealing with geriatric issues to get them up to speed in that.
Not only primary care physicians, but all health professionals, because the things that we want them to do can be done almost by anyone and certainly by any healthcare professional. A big part of it is to try, and with the Medicare enrollment coming up, there's an annual Medicare wellness exam. And what we're doing with a lot of the groups is we're going to get into the annual Medicare wellness exam the specific geriatric questions, and we've developed algorithms. So if you have a problem with one of those, instead of the primary care doctor saying, well, I need to send you to a geriatrician, I can't find one, don't know what to do, the algorithm will actually lead the primary care physician or the health professional, if it's an advanced practice nurse or physician assistant, to doing things. And then we have handouts for the patient themselves so that they can actually get a handout if they have, say, frailty. This is the things that you need to do. We'll also be screening in the community. We did a screening last week in Ferguson, and we'll be doing more and more to try and pick up people in the community who are not seeing their physician regularly and see if we can actually get them into the system and get them treated early. The whole secret of good geriatric care is early prevention. We want to stop disability in its tracks before it gets there, and that's what this is all about.
So you are not, in essence, training other physicians. What you're doing is giving them access to those who have been trained in the geriatric specialty.
Well, we've sort of worked out that training physicians is not that easy. I've been teaching physicians for nearly 40 years now, and incredibly, it's very hard to do, and they've got a lot to learn, and they don't always pick up and find the things that I think are exciting in geriatrics, what they should learn. So what we feel is we are training because we're doing a number of things. We're making the questionnaires available on the computer for the physician. So everybody now is getting electronic health records. They'll be able to have somebody in their office ask those questions. the computer will red flag the things that are wrong. It will say, why don't you test for this and this and this and this person? And it will also print out a sheet for the patient. So we think this is training. The other way we're training is we're going to screen large numbers of people in the community. And as we screen those people, we're giving them a sheet to take to their physician saying, you know, I was screened, I was found to have sarcopenia, a loss of muscle mass, or I was found to have anorexia of aging, or I'm not thinking well, or basically I'm frail and or fatigued. And this says that you should have done this. Why haven't you done this? Because the best training for physicians is when a patient comes and asks. And so we're hoping that patients, when they go for their annual medical wellness exam, will say to the physician, I want to have this done. Why are you not looking for frailty, sarcopenia, anorexia of aging, and early cognitive function? These are treatable things. These are things that with lifestyle interventions, we can slow down the course of them, and we can also give people advice on how to do better and deal with them.
A lot of emphasis, as I understand it, in rural areas. You mentioned Perry County, which we can call rural, I think, for
it's
this
pretty
purpose.
Rural.
Yeah, it is pretty rural. And also underserved communities, and that's why you have special emphasis in places like North St. Louis.
That's correct. Yeah. That's a big piece of the grant. Obviously, if most people can't get good geriatric care, when you get into underserved areas, it virtually falls apart. So we're trying to look at how can we do this? We're working with SSM, who, as you know, just bought our hospital, sort of. So therefore, they are actually looking at putting this out through all of their system throughout Missouri as a way to start picking this up. We're trying to think, what are the other ways of doing this? So the big part of this is really to enthuse administrators to put it in, and then I'll spend a lot of time going out talking to physicians and healthcare professionals saying, this is why you should do it. This is why the computer program will work for you, and it'll make it easier. Now, we should point out that if a physician does the annual Medicare wellness exam, they're actually very well paid for it. And if they use the template we've got, this template takes very little time in an electronic health record to get done, can be done by somebody else. So the physician will actually do better, and I believe that if you give people money to do things, they're liable to do it.
Well, that usually works. It's particularly important in Missouri. I was surprised to find out that the percentage of aging population in Missouri is significantly higher than the average percentage across the country.
That's correct, and it's going up quickly. I mean, part of that is because young people leave Missouri, which is a very sad thing for all of us, but we need to increase the enthusiasm for younger people to stay here. Those of us who are older tend to stay because, after all, it's where we've lived for a long time, and you don't really want to run away just when you're getting to the stage where you can enjoy your life.
What does the fact that the federal government has come up with this grant, what is that saying? Is the government showing more interest in older Americans or what?
I think the government has always had an interest. They have struggled to find a way to get healthcare professionals interested. And this is an attempt to say, look, we really need to find ways to get the healthcare professional involved. And we need to also get the message out to all the older people there that we're paying for the wellness exam. There are things you should want to get in that annual wellness exam. You need to ask your physician to do it. It requires a separate visit to have it done, and they will do and can do all of these things. And then they need to make a list of the things we're talking about: frailty, sarcopenia, muscle loss.
What is sarcopenia?
Sarcopenia is something that happens to all of us as we get older. We lose some muscle, and more importantly, we lose muscle strength. And the loss of muscle strength is what gets us into trouble. We can't walk as fast. We can't lift as much stuff up. That's really what it's about. And it's treatable by simple things and lifestyle. First of all, you've got to exercise, obviously, to keep muscle around. The second thing is you've got to eat high protein. The third thing is add some vitamin D. And those three things together actually make a big difference to maintaining your muscle mass. They're simple, but if you start to lose it and somebody says to you, you're losing it, that's the time that we've got to now develop specific programs for older people, it's a little more than just being able to walk. You've got to do a little more than walking. So it's sort of moving towards that resistance exercise thing that many of us don't want to do. Walking the dog's one thing, you know, working with weights and stuff is a little else. But we really need to recognize that a little bit of increased exercise can make a big difference as we get older.
Well, most of the things that you've mentioned so far have been physical issues. What about the cognitive part of the equation?
So we have a rapid cognitive screen. That's the hardest part of it. It takes 2.5 minutes to do. We validated it, and it will pick up particularly early cognitive function. Most of the screens that physicians have used, the one that everybody knows about, the mental status, actually take about 10 minutes and pick up only dementia. We've now got a 2.5 minute that'll pick up when you're starting to get into trouble. Why do we want to know that? Well, first of all, there are treatable causes of loss of cognitive function as we get older. These are things like sleep apnea, hypothyroidism, vitamin B12 deficiency, depression. These are very treatable. So if they are missed and the physician doesn't pick it up until, you know, 5 years down the line, they're not as easy to treat. By that time, it's hard to treat. The second part of it is, you know, you go to a physician, and the physician often gives you a lot of instructions. I don't know when you go, but they usually say, yeah, you've got to do this. You know, if you've got diabetes, you've got to prick your finger. You've got to adjust your insulin. You've got to do all these things. If the physician doesn't know that you're not thinking well, they rapidly tell you what to do, and then they leave you there. And we actually had a study where we had medical students stand outside the door of people with diabetes and ask what the physician changed. And 70% of them had no idea what the physician had done when they came out of the door. About 20% of people with diabetes, even in their 50s, don't think well enough to follow the instructions.
What about the issue of self-diagnosis of cognitive loss? Is that something that we can do?
So to some extent, it's true. You can do that. And in fact, Washington University developed something called the AD8, Alzheimer's Disease 8 Questions, which is really a self-diagnosis or your family member's diagnosis. The problem with it is it doesn't really pick up the very early piece. You know, when things are really going wrong, most probably somebody in your family knows. But people come to me 3 to 4 years after they have developed dementia because now the family's taking it seriously. So self-diagnosis is bad. My wife, who I always give a bad time to in these talks, loses her keys all the time. The other day I found them in the car. She'd left them in the car. Now, that's worse than ever, so, you know, who knows? But really, I can't say that that's a memory problem. It's just one of her idiosyncrasies. And many, many people lose keys all the time. So, you know, you're careful not to over-self-diagnose. That's why a good diagnostic test to pick it up is important, and then the physician can start to say these are things to do. The other thing is if you're losing your memory, advanced directives are very important. You need to make your decisions when you still can about what you want, not wait until you no longer can make the decision and then your family's uncertain what you wanted. So that's another. And then actually getting involved with the Alzheimer's Association, the socialization there. They have a lot of good programs. There are many good research programs going on. Lots of things, if you get picked up early, that will make a big difference. So, you know, we had a large conference that we tried to say, what should you do? And half of the physicians did not want us to screen in the community because they said we don't have enough physicians to look after people. We've developed this program here where the primary care physician can do most of the things that are necessary, make a big difference.
I have to take a break, but I just want to reassure people in the audience who do lose those keys occasionally or forget when they walk from one room to another what they were looking for. We had Dr. John Morris on the other day, an Alzheimer's specialist here in town, and he said, this is absolutely very, very normal. Don't worry about it, but there are occasions where if it gets to be a noticeable kind of problem, persistent problem, then there may be cause for concern. Right. Dr. John Morley is our guest. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to get into it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. Back with Dr. John Morley, Slough Care geriatrician, I should say, and director of geriatrics at the St. Louis University School of Medicine. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to Dr. Morley. Doctor, before we take some calls, and we've got a number of them in already, I just want to reaffirm something you said a couple of moments ago or alluded to, and that is the need, and you've written about this, the need for everyone over the age of 70 should have annual screenings for cognitive decline.
I think there's no question about that. That's what we, John Morris and I, actually put together the recommendations very recently that were published. We all say over 70 is where we should be at least case finding when you come to your physician or your healthcare professional. And so there's no question that's very important to do.
But where would one go for such screenings? I mean, if we're short on the number of geriatric specialists and a lot of the primary care physicians aren't well trained.
So, Don, this is the reason I'm here. They're going to go to their primary care physician and ask them to do it. They're going to say there is available a very rapid screening that can be done. Your clerk can do it. Your nurse can do it. I need it. So if people who are listening here go to their physicians and ask for it, then my job of educating the physicians is done, and I am relying very much on all those older people and the younger people to go and say, we need this available. And I think that, quite honestly, it will make a big, big difference. And we really do expect it to become universal in Missouri within 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so now we've connected the dots in those areas. Let's get the audience into the conversation, and we will start with Elaine in South St. Louis. Elaine, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
I wanted to recount my recent frustrations with finding a geriatrician. For many years, I've been a patient of Washington University physicians, and I became convinced that I needed a geriatrician to follow me. I'm now 78. They had 4 in the practice, all of whom were involved in Alzheimer's research. Nobody who saw patients on a regular basis. When I talked to my own physician's practice, they said, oh, we're all trained to take care of senior citizens, and I didn't agree with that. And I had watched my husband collect up, as his health problems grew, quite a bevy of specialists, for one thing and another, all of whom were treating and prescribing and practicing what I call silo medicine, a different specialist for everything, with the primary care physician being something of a traffic cop. Finally found a great physician, Dr. Mark Gunby, who sees only people over 65 and who did his advanced training at St. Louis University. I'm happy now, but I certainly was one very frustrated senior citizen.
Thank you, Elaine. That was a great comment, because Mark Gunby was one of the first people we trained when I came to St. Louis, as a wonderful physician, so I agree with you. But this is why we're trying to train and find a way to get the primary care physician to be able to pick up many of these things and then triage those things that are necessary to geriatricians. We don't have enough geriatricians. The number of geriatricians has gone down in this country since I became a geriatrician, not up, and this is while the population is getting older.
Yeah, there are 70-plus million baby boomers out there who are now in the area that we're talking about. You would think that this would be a growing specialty.
Should be a growing specialty, yeah. But in fact, this is being recognized by the G7. Next year, one of their big issues with the WHO is going to be on aging and how to increase the care in the developed world on aging. I'm going in next week to start the process with WHO, and it's really exciting, I think, because the answer, unfortunately, and where they fixed it, is that geriatricians take a long time to see people because it takes a long time, and therefore they need to get paid more. Geriatricians are amongst the poorest paid physicians, and this is a capitalist society.
Are the aging problems being faced by older Americans the same as aging problems being faced in other industrialized countries?
They're very similar, and I travel a lot around the world. I just came back from a month in Singapore, and it's virtually the same in Singapore as it is here, and they're facing the same set of problems. And in all the stuff we were talking about earlier, we're actually doing with the government in Singapore as well.
Let's take another call. We'll bring in Joe, calling from St. Charles County. Joe, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I got two questions. My first question is, what's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's?
Okay, so that's, Joe, is a fairly simple question in that dementia covers many things. There are about 150 to 200 causes of dementia. Alzheimer's is one form of dementia which is thought to be predominantly associated with an increase in beta amyloid. People tend to lump them together because we don't do a very good job at doing this, but dementia can be due to sleep apnea, for instance. So that's a treatable cause of dementia. Totally different. Vascular causes, Lewy body dementia, and so on and so forth. So Alzheimer's is one form of dementia.
Okay. Now, the other question. My mother, I think she is maybe more of a dementia. She's 91 years old. You know, she, when I go to visit her, she remembers my wife's name and my kids and my grandkids. And a minute later, she asks me who I am.
Yeah.
You know, so, and then I come back and I think, well, you know, I'm 64. Am I at risk? Because now I am really bad about remembering certain things, you know, and names and places and. And all of a sudden, I just go blank.
So you may or may not be at risk. There is a genetic occurrence of Alzheimer's. If you're worried about it, you should have yourself screened for your memory problems. Ignore what's worrying you. Rather, let somebody see if you've really got problems, and then they can make suggestions of things that can be done, both lifestyle changes and look for potentially treatable causes.
When I was growing up, the term was senility. I think that probably was a blanket term in those days that covered all the forms of dementia that you mentioned and Alzheimer's. Is that, you think that's
senility,
right?
Is now considered a bad term, as many other terms, they no longer are acceptable. I don't know why, because at that time it just meant that you were getting old and it was what we thought all our grandparents were at that time, but then it became a bad word. So, yeah, it's dementia. Senility is just another term for dementia, but an unacceptable term in the modern politically correct way.
All right, I'll strike that from my vocabulary then, or try to. Dr. Morley, you have written, I believe you have written this, that cognitive issues can be dealt with if they are discovered early. So when is early? And what can you do when you do discover it?
So early is somewhere between 65 to 70. The first thing, as I keep on saying, is there are treatable, reversible causes of cognitive dysfunction. Sleep apnea is a big, big one. Diabetes, we're finding a large increase in the people with diabetes. Atrial fibrillation, fixing atrial fibrillation so you don't get little strokes. So there are fixable things. And then the FINGER study, which was the Finnish geriatric study, FINGER, and basically that one showed that if you go on a Mediterranean diet with relatively large amounts of extra virgin olive oil, more than the average American could ever get in a week, exercise, computer games, and socialization together, you slow down the process substantially, even if you've got a dementia. So we can make a big difference in slowing the process down, and we can treat some of these, and we're rapidly finding more and more things that we can do. So I don't see that we can't do things. That's why we have a handout that goes with the screen telling the patient exactly what should be done, because if they do those things, they are going to do much better.
We can't underestimate the value of exercise and diet. You keep – every time you're on the program, which is frequently – that comes up every time.
Yeah, Don, I feel like I'm preaching to the acquired or the required or something, because I don't know what I'm saying when I say this anymore. People have to learn that this is absolutely key.
Yeah, let's read an email that has come to us from Laura Z, and she writes, depression seems to be common among the elderly. There are objective reasons, physical limitations, loss of loved ones, isolation. Why do some elderly get super depressed experiencing these factors and others do not?
So depression is, again, partially genetic and partially related to your environment. Some people have neurotransmitters that just these little things in their neurons that jump from one neuron to the other that fire differently. Those people, when they have something going on in, around them in the environment, get worse depression. We all have periods where we're somewhat depressed, but people who have the wrong apparatus in their neurons, where one thing jumps to another neuron where it shouldn't be jumping, those are the people who become very depressed. Those are the people who need treatment with drugs and or perhaps electroconvulsive therapy. It's important to realize that psychotherapy and exercise are very good treatments for 99% of people with depression. We should not just think that taking a tablet is going to cure our depression.
Is that generally a genetic situation?
It's genetic or acquired. It's very difficult to tell which one. There's a bit of both going on with most people.
We'll take another call now. Jerry in O'Fallon, Missouri is with us, and he may have a connection here between what we were just discussing and what he wants to talk about. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, good morning. First of all, Dr. Morley, I always enjoy listening to you when you're on a, when you're a guest on the
Thanks,
show.
Thanks, Jerry.
And I just want to say I was very fortunate when I entered the workforce to enter into an extremely multi-generational work environment, and I found it was very, very rewarding to have when I was younger friends that were much older. And I have found now that I'm at the opposite end of the spectrum that it's very important to cultivate and maintain friendships with people that are younger. And it kind of keeps you from getting this. I find a lot of people get into like an older person's mindset and all the people that they associate with are about their age. And, you know, you get to this point where really all people want to talk about are their aches and pains and physical infirmities. And it's kind of refreshing, I think. And it, I think essentially keeps you thinking young. And I think that's a very key to very physically and psychologically staying young.
There's no question you're right, Jerry. Socialization and socialization across the ages. When I was a medical student, we used to work with people in nursing homes and people who were shut in at home. And I learned as much as the people we went to and worked with. It's a wonderful experience for young and old people to come together. In one of our nursing homes, we have a Eden Alternative with lots of animals. The reason the animals are there is so the children will come in on the weekend to see their grandparents. It really makes a big difference. So there are lots of things that socialization across generations really is very important about.
He used the term mindset, and I think we have talked about this before too, that actually as an older person can really kind of think young, and that will help them stay young.
Well, I think we all have to think young. I think we have to be realistic about thinking young. We shouldn't think we can all climb Everest at 85 or something like that. But we should be looking and keeping aware of what's going on around us, trying to do what we can and interact with as many people of different ages as we can. That's, I think, the mindset that's important. But we've got to recognize sometimes as we get older, we need help. We've got to be prepared to take that help. We've got to get ourselves screened. I just want to keep on reminding you. We will be doing screenings at St. Louis University in November and December. So you'll look out for those, and people are welcome to come.
You'll be putting information on that on your website,
We'll put
I'm
on
sure.
the website and try and get it out in other ways.
And we will put a link to your website on our website. A couple of minutes left. What do you think is the biggest mistake that older people make as they age that is most debilitating or not good for them?
Well, I think Jerry most probably got it. It's keeping your mind active, exercising, making sure that you get appropriate medical care, not inappropriate with polypharmacy and a variety of things that often happen, choosing to see that you try to keep as young as you can, but not overdoing it.
Mm-hmm. And how often should people in this age group be seeing their physician, geriatrician or not?
Well, they should be seeing a physician at least once a year who does an appropriate geriatric screen. I would say other than that, whether you've got something really wrong with you, you should see your physician. But if the physician gives you just a drug every time you go in to treat it, maybe you should be avoiding the physician at times. And that's why the geriatric screening, being aware of polypharmacy, is so important. And that's what we're hoping. We're going to increase that awareness amongst all the healthcare professionals. And remember, advanced practice nurses often are much better at doing some of this. They have often had more training in geriatrics, and they may be the person who will do a better job. They spend more time with you.
Are we just living too long?
No, come on, Don. You and me? No.
I don't mean us. Of course, we want to go
no,
on
No, we
forever.
Are not living too long.
But I think one of the more recent times we talked, there was some suggestion that we might soon be living to be 120 years
well,
old.
Well, I think not in your and my lifetime, but I think at some stage we will be living much longer. If we live a healthy lifespan, that's fine. And that's what we want. We want to be able to remain healthy, remain active, remain enjoying life. There's no such thing as living too long. There is such a thing as getting unhappy and diseased and miserable and feel as if we're living too long. But that can happen to you at 60, or I've got people who I know in their hundreds who are as happy as you and I have ever been.
All right. I do have one more email here I want to give you before we say goodbye. This one's from Kelly, who writes, is there a stigma for older people to get screened for things like this? Like, do they avoid going because it makes them feel bad for aging or feel like they are getting older? I think about asking my mom to do this, but I don't want to offend her.
Most older people actually like being screened. They get very happy when they find that there's nothing wrong with them. And many of those who have something wrong have been hoping somebody will find it and fix it. There is no stigma to being appropriately screened and finding the appropriate therapies to make you get better.
Will Obamacare help in, with regard to giving people better opportunities for these screenings?
So I think the Affordable Health Care Act, which included the annual Medicare wellness that came out of that, I think is extraordinarily good. And again, I think the new movement towards advanced care directives and understanding that we need to make the choices that are right for us early on and get the right treatment is very good. So I am very much in favor of the Affordable Health Care Act. I don't like to call it Obamacare because it's care for all people. And it came out of Congress. It wasn't just one person. It's a congressional mandate that everybody eventually decided they would go with. And that, I think, has been a wonderful thing for the country. It could be much better. It could be expanded. But I'm not holding my breath at the
moment.
Well,
we in the media started calling it Obamacare when the president called it Obamacare. And
we
said
understand,
he didn't mind
it.
Dr. John Morley, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and we wish you the best of luck with this new project over the next couple of years.
Thank you very much,
Thank you
Tom.
For being with us. That's Fluke Hair, geriatrician and director of geriatrics at St. Louis University School of Medicine, Dr. John Morley. Coming up, what you need to know about Medicare open enrollment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.